I understand that the theme of your events and services and thinking this month is journey. What does it mean to be a people of journey? And we've already heard a little bit about Katie's journey to Humla, and I trust that every time anyone speaks about whatever kind of a journey it is, whether it's a physical journey or some other kind of journey, that it reminds each of us of our own, well, what's going on in my life and how does that relate and how can I? Because we're here to, in part, to be people of examined lives, and we like to think about how we can live our best values. Protestant minister and author Frederick Buchner said, is quoted as saying, "The place where God calls you is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. The place where God calls you is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet." So we'll be talking about some people for whom that seems to be a reality. They seem to have found that place. And I think it doesn't matter if you're 12 or 32 or 82, you can still be finding that place. So what, to follow up on the Child Haven theme, 3-year-old Kalpana was living in a brothel in Boda, in Nepal, with her mother, and also on the street with her brother and the older sister that took care of them. Their mother may have been an alcoholic as well as a prostitute, but she did not seem to be able to care for the children in a way that we would consider adequate. One of the volunteers from Child Haven was visiting Boda one day, and she found Kalpana lying in a puddle in the street, either asleep or passed out. So the volunteer gave the child immediate aid and made sure that she wasn't dying or bleeding to death. And then she walked back to the Child Haven home to sort out what more could be done. And later that day, the volunteer, along with Katie, walked the 2 kilometers back to Boda and found Kalpana again, miraculously revived and quite able to start asking all the white people she saw for money. That was her life. Back at Child Haven again, Bonnie, the director, told them that in order to bring Kalpana to Child Haven, if they thought that was a good idea, they would have to find Kalpana's mother to get the mother's consent, and then to find the child again. And that was a project that these two volunteers were willing to take on. That's the sort of situation that the homes have to face from time to time. Sometimes, many times, the children are referred through some kind of social service agency, such as they exist, but not always. So I'll tell you a bit more about Kalpana later. Bonnie and Fred Cappuccino live in Maxville near Ottawa in an old stone farmhouse, and they have raised 21 children themselves, 19 of whom were adopted from other countries. And some of them were adopted through an agency that Bonnie and Fred helped to start called Families for Children. And I don't know, some of you may have seen one of these two books. This is Bonnie and Her 21 Children, a memoir by her long-suffering husband, Fred Cappuccino. And this is a storybook called Bonnie Ma and Fred Pa's Big Family, which they're both quite good. So with the 21 children safely grown, Bonnie and Fred decided to reach out further, and they founded their first Child Haven home for destitute children. And destitute, in their definition, is had access to less than one regular meal a day. They opened one home at a time, and that began in 1986. And now there are 9 homes in India, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Tibet in China. And Bonnie visits each of these projects four times a year. These days, her son Robin goes with her most of the time. My own direct interest in Child Haven was fed certainly partly by my experience of the month my family and I volunteered at the Child Haven Nepal home in 2001, and then when Katie returned there for 4 months by herself. Child Haven has a Unitarian connection, as many of you know. Now in his 90s, Fred Cappuccino was the Unitarian minister at the Lakeshore Congregation near Montreal for several years. That's a church that my family attended. And Child Haven also has a connection to Gandhi. This week, I have been re-watching the movie Gandhi. The first time I watched it, I was already thinking that this was an unusually great person, but then when I saw the movie, I was deeply inspired because of his deep integrity and his efforts to live so closely according to his beliefs and principles and his conviction and courage to stand up for what was right and his dedication to changing the living conditions for his people. And of course, I wasn't planning to be another Gandhi, but even to live a little bit in the same direction would be a goal. And it's in some ways like I think Jesus is for many people too, both men whose teachings and integrity were admirable, and their messages were grounded in their strongly held beliefs and convictions, and both of them were advocates and examples of kindness and nonviolence and forgiveness and forbearance and faith. And each of them embodied the pursuit of justice for the oppressed in their political action, and they were both assassinated as revolutionaries. Gandhi lived from 1869 until 1948. He was born into a trading class family and schooled in India and London, and apparently never a very good student. That gives hope for some of us. But yet he became the leader of millions. Nehru, Jawaharlal Nehru, wrote of Gandhi that the essence of his teaching was fearlessness and truth, and action allied to these, always keeping the welfare of the masses in view. That fearlessness and truth, that's a phrase that I particularly like. Gandhi pursued truth, wrote about truth, told the truth. Included in his truth-telling were things that were challenging to the norms of his country and culture. For example, he could not see any truth in the concept of peoples being relegated to different castes by accident of birth. Nor did he believe that men were the superior sex. And both of these ideas were very deeply ingrained in the culture as well as the era that he lived in. And yet he opposed them and worked hard for much of his life to change them. That so reminds me of our first Unitarian principle of affirming the inherent dignity and worth of every person. And perhaps that is our most basic and our most challenging principle to live from. Gandhi's ideals and influence have had a direct effect on the welfare of several hundred children and women through Child Haven, and through the two people who have dedicated their lives to caring for children in desperate circumstances. Child Haven began as one couple's efforts to help a few children in Hyderabad, India. The Hyderabad home was officially opened in 1986 with 27 children from three remote villages. The house was in pretty bad shape, and as it's told, the walls tended to melt when it rained. But Bonnie tends to act on the conviction that where there is need, the money will come. And at least in her case, it seems to have been the case surprisingly often, some kind of faith and fearlessness in the truth of her calling. At the time, an older farmer in Ontario heard about the Cappuccinos and their work, and he made a donation of $15,000 to them, which went straight into building a newer home in Hyderabad. And that's how it's been through the development of the whole enterprise, Child Haven International. The world's need is great, and Bonnie and Fred's capacity for compassion is enormous. I know they believe, with Unitarian Sophia Foss, that each night a child is born is a holy night. Their generosity of heart impels them to work with focus and determination on doing what they can to light a candle in the dark. As Margaret Mead is credited with saying, never doubt that a small group of people can change the world. It's the only thing that ever has. Just to play devil's advocate for a second here, it could be argued theoretically that taking in a handful of children is actually not doing much to change the systems of oppression and poverty or to change the world for the better. It's just a project that makes us North Americans feel good. But I think we need to do both. And what is a life for if not to spread goodwill and compassion and loving kindness? And who knows what any one of those children might do with their lives? Will one of them become another Gandhi? And so I want to agree with Mead's statement about small groups of children, small groups of people changing the world. In this case, one child at a time. Child Haven operates on the principles that Gandhi embraced, including simple living. The principles that Child Haven acknowledges are that there is no recognition of caste among any of the people there, the equality of the sexes, nonviolence in raising the children and in dealing with the outside world and animals, respect for cultural and religious background to the extent that there's no proselytizing allowed, and they celebrate all the festivals. So there's celebrations all the time because there's so many religions are represented in each home. They have meals that are vegetarian and typically rice and lentils and vegetables with some soy milk or soy yogurt. And they live simply. Each child has a small metal suitcase with all their worldly goods fit inside. And Gandhi was certainly a proponent of living simply. The poverty level seen in Nepal and India is not a comfortable way to live by anyone's standards, and certainly not ours in most of Canada. But material poverty does create resourcefulness. People who live with very little must be resourceful about how to use what they have. I think this resourcefulness is something that many of us have lost because we don't need it as much, perhaps. And that's a sad thing for the world community and for the earth. Just as an example, when we were at the Kathmandu home, it was just before the rainy season, which means that it had been dry for a long time. And the water table was very low. And in the home that we were staying in, there would often be no running water for several hours in each day. So we bathed with a sponge and a bucket, and we did our laundry the same way, and there was no water wasted. Finally, one evening, after looking at the skies for weeks, there was a huge, huge downpour of rain at last, and it felt like we should have a festival. However, the first thing I saw while we were not having a festival was Gowri, one of the caregivers, she's about 4'6", Taking full practical advantage, instead of dancing in the rain, she and her teenage son grabbed a few buckets, and they were putting them under the waterfall. And you know how sometimes roofs have a V like that, so the water poured down this V, and it was raining so hard that they would just put a bucket under it would be filled very quickly. They would rush it into the latrine and swab the place out, and another bucket and another bucket. So they were just racing back and forth, and the latrine gave the whole area a good cleaning for the first time in a while. And they were like a human conveyor belt on full speed, knowing that the rain might only last a few minutes, but they just did an amazing, amazing job. In the Tibet home, they've built a solar heat collector, which is in the form of a parabolic mirror, which focuses the sun's heat onto a kettle of water. There's also, they've built a huge greenhouse in that cold and barren-looking place. And the greenhouse allows them to grow edible produce almost all year round, which is quite amazing. And such quality of nutrition as the vegetables, fresh vegetables, would be completely out of range for those children otherwise. One greenhouse has stone walls, I assume they're about so high, and then metal standards holding up plastic covers over the top. And the metal standards are welded using the welding equipment that Child Haven owns. And since they built these greenhouses, other people in the village have borrowed the welding equipment and built their own greenhouses, so they've spread the wealth of that nutritional project. Gandhi was a vegetarian, and that had in part to do with his respect for life and nonviolence. To ensure good nutrition while serving a vegetarian diet at the homes in Child Haven, has purchased some soya cow machines, which was a Canadian invention. And I'm not totally clear on the details, but it may have been partly financed through Child Haven in its invention. Soy milk is low-cost, high-protein product, which is cheaper to produce than cow's milk, and from a given acreage, something like 10 times as much soy milk can be produced at about a third of the cost of cow's milk. The soy cow machines are used at the Child Haven homes, I think in all of them now. The soy milk is made on the premises of the schools, and that means it's in homes, and it's safe from contamination by being diluted with possibly unclean water. And it's also free from the danger of transmitting tuberculosis or other things from infected cows. And in addition to the health benefits of soy milk, the Soy Cow Project has generated employment for women, and that's another thing that the Child Haven homes try to do it also helps some women. So the women that are using the soy cow machines are trained to operate them and then sell the soy milk products and achieve a certain amount of economic self-sufficiency and to generate some revenue which can be used for the benefit of their children, because helping the poorest of the poor usually means helping women. Also, Child Haven is going green as much as they can. For example, to fuel their cooking stoves in some of the homes, there's an invention called a Gobar gas plant, which is used all over India now. And it is simple, and some types can be constructed on site. And they collect methane gas from manure and use it to burn in stoves and other heaters. And the byproduct is the demethane manure, which is used as a fertilizer. So Child Haven intends to have one at each of their homes, and I'm not sure exactly how far they are in that, but they have several anyway. As I said, the mandate of Child Haven is to take in children who are destitute under the age of 6 and to give them full care until they are finished high school. Usually the children are referred by social service agencies, but not always. Tulsi and Kalpana would be two examples. And so back to Kalpana's story, how to find Kalpana's mother to get permission to bring her to the home. The volunteers again walked the 2 kilometers down to the square in Boda and asked around, where would we find Kalpana's mother? And they were told to go and ask that woman over there. And that woman over there, it turned out, was a woman who had no legs, but propelled herself around with her arms and seemed to be the center of the social activity of the square. At first, the volunteers were tempted to feel sorry for her, but it soon became evident that she functioned perfectly well, and in fact, she seemed to be the hub of the community. Her children were clean and neatly dressed in their school uniforms, and lots of people enjoyed being in her presence for their own reasons. It is a reminder not to assume anything you see, anything about people that you see. And this woman was able to point out who Kalpana's mother was. So Katie and the other volunteer asked for and received the mother's consent to bring Kalpana back to Childhaven to live. And through the cooperative efforts of several volunteers, it was made possible to take this little girl off the streets. Good chance she would have ended up in the brothel herself in probably not too many years. That same day, by chance, another wee girl came to Childhaven. This one was referred through an agency. Shrizana was her name, and she also had a family, so she was not strictly an orphan either. But she was the youngest of 6 children, and their single mother just couldn't feed them all. Shrizana was a little lady, but even at the age of 2.5, she also stole money, as she had been taught by her family. And these two little girls, Shrizana and Kalpana, they were their own little band. And now I think they're about 21, and they have Facebook pages, and they're doing what they do. But they made it through school, and that means they can probably support themselves. In 1948, Gandhi was shot to death by a Hindu fanatic who disagreed with his working towards friendship with Muslims, between Muslims and Hindus. Perhaps you've seen pictures of Gandhi's funeral procession. Literally, there were people as far as the eye of the camera could see, and his ashes are scattered, not exactly scattered, all over India. That is to say, they were divided up and parceled out to many different locations, and several locations that our family went to had a little piece of Gandhi. Sometimes it all seems too hard. There's too much suffering in the world, and I am only one person, and you are only one person. But then I look at what Gandhi was able to do, and I look at what my friends Bonnie and Fred Cappuccino are doing, and I have to say, who am I to turn my face away from the world's hunger? The place where God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. Bonnie and Fred live from the place where their deep passion meets the world's deep need, and I don't know if they get discouraged or not, but I do know that they keep on going, and so must we. Each of us does our own bit, however we can. Kalpana grew up, but took her a while. She had nightmares at first, every night. She was not very healthy at first, but then, even by as quickly as 2 years later, she was robust and healthy. The two little girls are now 21-ish. Tulsi is 16 and also very strong, partly because one 18-year-old girl wanted to save his life. Not many of us will be called as directly to save one person's life, by such actions. But it is given to each of us to find ways of making a difference, one way or another. Whatever we can do, whether it's here or overseas or back east, if your deep gladness can be matched up with the world's or the community's or the church's or the family's deep need, then that is where you must be. One more quote from Rabindranath Tagore. "Let me light my lamp, says the star, and never debate if it will dispel the dark. Our separate fires will kindle one flame. May it be so."